It's about time to get started. Get the countdown going. All right. I guess you guys can hear me. Last session for the day, last session for the conference. So I hope everybody had a good conference. I know I did. So today we're here to talk about, so it's a deep dive into custom add-in provisioning and deployment in Office 365. So while the title says Office 365 and my demos will be Office 365, a lot of these same concepts are applicable to your on-prem environments as well. So my name is Steve Walker. Who is Steve? A little bit about me. I'm a senior software engineer in the Office 365 Developer Experiences team. That is not the developer experiences field organization, but actually part of the engineering org in Office. I was previously on the SharePoint customer advisory team for a number of years, working with folks like Wayne when we would get angry customers or big nasty things that were not easy to sort out. So a lot of experience with SharePoint directly. I'm now focused on extensibility across the suite. I did spend a number of years in Microsoft Consulting Services, so I do know how the real world works. I'm not one of those guys who came out of college and started building software in Redmond. So I'm a husband, father, like Sounders FC, which is our local football club. Yay. And there's some contact info for me, so my email address. If you want to yell at me on Twitter, you can do that, or I'm pretty active on Facebook as well. So. All right, the agenda. So first, we're going to talk about the options you have for deploying. And you'll see throughout my slide deck where I say apps/add-ins. I know we renamed it. It was apps before. Now it's add-ins. And so I want to try to reinforce that. We actually believe there's kind of two major types of apps in the new app model. There's the add-ins, and then there's the extensions. So add-ins are really, they light up within the experience of Office or SharePoint or Exchange. And then extensions are really just standalone apps or third-party apps that integrate with our products with the APIs. We're going to talk a little bit about deploying to the store, how to get apps from the store. We will talk about deploying to Exchange. I know the Exchange folks kind of kicked extensibility out of their stack a few years ago for the most part, but it's back. So we actually see a lot of interest in building add-ins for Outlook and for Exchange, just because so many users spend so much of their time in that product. So I've been working with about 700 ISVs over the last 6 months or so, and I would say 80% of them have an interest in the Exchange space, or Outlook space, which was very interesting to me. We're gonna talk about deploying to the corporate catalog, what that looks like, and then we'll go into some additional approaches. So don't box yourself into just thinking, add-in doesn't do what I want it to do. There's tons of other options that you need to consider, and you'll still be using the app model. So first, we'll go through some options that you have for deploying these. Another area of great interest, how many people here have developed things for the Office client before? Visto plugins, Calm. So not very many folks, a couple. And very useful. Things like document composition scenarios, or maybe you want to interact with a line of business app and, do things with Excel. We're also seeing a lot of interest in that space. If you think about where your business users spend most of their time, it's going to be inside one of those apps. And so being able to surface custom data and custom content inside there is very interesting. So if we have different types of apps, so there's task pane apps, which are actually the apps that light up in the task pane. So task pane opens up to the right hand side, and then we have content apps, which are actually embedded straight within the content of the document that you're working on, or spreadsheet in Excel's vernacular. You have mail app or mail add-in, which lights up within the Outlook interface, and I'll show you what that looks like here in a little bit. And then there's add-ins for SharePoint. So all of these can be deployed through the Office Store. So how many people here are ISVs? None. I will not even go into those topics. No, I'm kidding. The Office Store actually gives you a great vehicle to be able to get things out into the marketplace, and have it be discoverable by users across the planet with the great number of eyeballs that are looking into Office 365 now. We'll see more and more opportunities for ISVs to do that. So Then you have the corporate catalog, so task pane apps, content apps, and apps for SharePoint or add-ins for SharePoint can be deployed through the corporate catalog in SharePoint. Okay. You can also deploy for Office client installations that have, so maybe you don't have SharePoint in your organization, maybe you don't have Exchange in your organization. I don't know how many of you that would be, but you can still deploy add-ins for the Office clients onto a file share. So you can just have a shared folder on your network that hosts these things, and then I'll go through some considerations for that. So just because you're not running Exchange, just because you're not running SharePoint, you can still deploy apps for those clients. Excuse me. So some considerations for publishing the Office add-ins. If you go to the store, the app is publicly available. Everybody will be able to see it. We don't have the ability for you to restrict who can see the app in the catalog. We've heard that feedback over and over again, that private marketplaces would be of interest, but that's not something we have today. There is a licensing framework available so that you can license the app and ensure that you're getting paid if you want to get paid. And then there's options for you to do custom licensing as well. The app package is actually verified by Microsoft, so we've got a team that primarily in Dublin, but there's also folks in India and China that will do verification. We look for, you know, technical, does it work, you know, those kinds of things. We'll go through that a little bit more. You must be signed in with a Microsoft Seller dashboard to upload apps, so you have to get a Seller dashboard account if you're going to be interested in that. Start that process early. Sometimes that can take a couple weeks. Sometimes you even have to fax stuff back and forth. They need to prove who you are and where to send that money. So, the app catalog. So that's available to users with access to the SharePoint app catalog. So somebody who's got access to that SharePoint app catalog will be able to use apps from that environment. There is no licensing framework available. It's assumed that if you've dumped an app in there, that it's just available to everyone. I will show you some approaches you can take to restrict what apps people can see. So maybe you've got add-ins that you've developed for your finance department, and you only want the people in the finance department to see it. You can actually restrict access. If you think about it, the catalog's really just a list in SharePoint. So there is app package verification performed by SharePoint when the app's updated, but we're really just verifying that the package is complete. We do not do any kind of technical or content validation of those apps when you go to the catalog. We've heard some folks say that they would like to do that as well. And as a matter of fact, we built a custom solution inside of MSIT for doing just that. But we don't have anything public at this point. There is no registration with Microsoft required. If you have rights to actually get to the corporate catalog, you can upload an app into there. You can, and if you're deploying in a file share, so again, specifically to the Office add-in space, it's available to anyone with access to the file share and has had their location registered in the Office Client Trust Center. So if you go into the Office Client, you go into the Trust Center, you can register a file share location as safe, so to speak, and then it would surface the apps that are in that file share. You can also set that through group policy, so if you want to push that app to your organization. Only the manifests are located there, so that's an important thing to consider. Almost all of these apps, aside from the SharePoint-hosted app, require some sort of a provider to host the main content of the app, and I'll show you guys that here in just a little bit. So the manifest itself would sit on the file share. But then you would have a web server somewhere that was going to host the website that had the actual add-in, the HTML, the JavaScript, CSS, and any provider code that you would have to generate those artifacts. There is no validation. It's just a file share and no registration with Microsoft required. So if you dump a manifest out there in that file share and it has something wrong with it, there's obviously no validation. So keep that in mind. SharePoint add-ins. So again, just... it's the same as the Office client and Exchange on the left-hand side, so I won't go through those. This slide's duplicative. I should stop. All right, so if you're publishing mail add-ins, and again, this is something that I'm seeing lots and lots of interest in. I mean, I work with a lot of customers and a lot of partners every day, and they are very interested. So one of the interesting things to consider, too, is on the mail add-in side, these things... will also work against Outlook.com. So there's over 400 million people that use Outlook.com, and it's growing, in addition to the Office 365 scenarios. And so partners that have, you know, both consumer and business use cases, we're seeing a lot of interest there. So, I mean, you could get to almost a billion people in that space. So there's a lot of opportunity there, and people spend a lot of time in their email. So some of the things that we just announced were like Uber. We have an add-in now for your mail for Uber, so you can set up an Uber to your meeting location. So lots of things like that are starting to happen, and you'll see more and more of that. The mail add-ins are installed in an Exchange catalog, so it's not in the corporate catalog. And it's available to any of the users of that Exchange server with which it resides. There are some options I'll walk you through when we go through the demo. The app manifest is registered with Exchange, and the app content, just like I talked about with the Office add-ins, is required to be hosted on a web server that's accessible by the Exchange environment. Okay, so Exchange actually has to go validate that that host is there when you upload the manifest. So if you have your manifest set to localhost, probably not going to work, right? So in your debug scenarios, that'll work, but you need to actually have a website. I see people trip on that all the time. They're like, hey, it works fine on my machine. How many developers have said that, right? So deploying to the store. So talk a little bit about the things that we do when we deploy to the store and some considerations that you may want to take. So first, familiarize yourself with the app validation policies and the FAQ. And I've got links to this in the slide deck. So if you guys want to grab it later, there's information there. The icons, images, and screenshots have to have accurate size and resolution. Even minor deviations will get it rejected. So that's like the most common reason that we reject things in the store. We want the store to have a consistent look, feel, and having things with different images and image sizes makes it not a very good experience. But I would say 80% of the rejections that we get are for little simple things like that. All app changes and updates require reapproval. So every time you submit an app to us, it has to be approved before it goes into the marketplace. If you change that app and you submit it to us again, it will have to be reapproved again. Now, having said that, if you think about the way the model works where you have a provider, if you have most of your artifacts in your provider, you can change that thing as much as you want. It's really just the manifest that you're uploading to us. Keep that in mind, outside of SharePoint-hosted apps. So SharePoint-hosted apps are actually entirely encapsulated in that one app package. So we do a lot of additional validation on those SharePoint-hosted apps. We look for things like your JavaScript trying to do things it shouldn't do. But for the most part, if you use a provider-hosted model, you have a lot more flexibility, and you're not going to have to redeploy to the store as often. And that's really the same for the corporate catalog scenario as well. You don't want to have to upload a new manifest every time. If all you changed is what was in the provider, you can just redeploy that. Be careful with CDN references. You can use them, but they have to be accessible through HTTPS and HTTP. Some of the tooling that we use for validation in the store checks for both. So be careful with that. I see people trip on that all the time. So some of the things that we actually validate in the store. So does it provide value to the Office Store customer? You may have noticed we no longer highlight the ICANN has cheeseburger app on the homepage. That's something we pulled out. But you know, at first we were letting quite a lot of apps into the store that maybe were of questionable value. So we've kind of culled a lot of those out, and we really look at, you know, is the scenario that your app is providing value to the Office customer, Office Store customer. It can display certain ads, but there is some strict content guidelines there. So we don't want anything racy, you know, showing up in your ads, especially later. So that's a quick way to get your ad yanked or get your app yanked. It must behave predictably. So, you know, have a common flow and stick to that flow and not do different things each time you run the app. We actually have a team of people who look at that and make sure that, you know, they'll do it, I think, 6 or 7 times, and they make sure that the flow of the app is predictable. It must put the customer in control. That's really about the consent and the privacy, right? So that you're letting them know what you're going to be doing with their data. It must be appropriate for a global audience. So we have people that look for that. You know, something that may be acceptable in one part of the world may not be acceptable in another, but if you're going to deploy it in that part of the world, and you do have some control over what languages you support in your manifest, It must be appropriate. And I know that's a little subjective, but the things that I've seen get rejected for that space are really pretty obvious. So it must be easily identified and understood. So the app needs to have a clear title. It needs to be clearly conveyed to the user what the value of the app is. Otherwise, we'll reject it back to you and tell you you need to enhance that. And then updates must not decrease functionality. So you can't pull the shell game on people and deploy a really cool app out there, and then your version 2 come out with 10% of the functionality when you want to upsell them to the one you're charging $900 a month for. All right, so we frown upon that. I have an asterisk next to that because there are times where maybe we change the API surface, or we change, there was one recently that we changed the ability of people to set the JS link on content types. And so there was a few store apps that fell prey to that, and they had to remove some of their functionality. So if it's something we've done to the platform and you just can't accomplish that in your app anymore, obviously we're not gonna hold you accountable for that, okay? It must utilize supported capabilities, so I won't go too much into that. Seamless and fluid experience. There's a ton of UX guidelines there, that link right there. And then we've also released here just as of, what was that, 2 days ago, 3 days, or no, about a week ago, we released Office UI Fabric to make it a lot easier to actually adhere to these types of guidelines and make your app look, your add-in look like part of Office or look like part of SharePoint. But there's a ton of really good guidance in there, even if you're not a store developer, if you're a corporate developer, but you care about what the app looks like and the add-in looks like within the clients or within the environment. There's a ton of really good guidance there. So I would suggest, even if you're a corporate developer and you're looking to build these add-ins, that there's some really good stuff there. All right, so we'll talk specifically about deploying the mail add-ins. So these are deployed to the Exchange Admin Center. So how many Exchange folks we got in here? A few, all right. So you may be familiar with this. Most of the SharePoint guys aren't. Exchange, what? Exchange has apps? Exchange has add-ins? So it's managed through the Admin Center. You get to that with Office 365 Admin, you go to Exchange, and then it's under Organization Apps. I'll actually show you this here in a minute in the browser. You must have Exchange administration rights or the My Custom Apps permission. So maybe you are the Exchange administrator and you don't want to put yourself on the hook for, you know, being in the loop every time somebody wants to deploy an app. There is a custom permission level that you could give maybe somebody in your IT, your dev department, the ability to actually deploy the apps. So you can delegate that permission and not put yourself in that spot. Also, there are remote deployment options, okay? So PowerShell is your friend. Once you've gotten a remote PowerShell session on your Exchange server, you can just install an add-in with a command, just new-app. So pretty straightforward, you just give it a URL to where the manifest is, which is actually pretty easy, and I just learned that not too long ago, so I was pretty happy with that. And then you can use these additional PowerShell commandlets to manage them. So if you want to do get app, you can get a list of the apps that are actually installed. If you set app, you can enable or disable a mail add-in on a mailbox, and I'll show you that through the UI, what that actually means here in a minute. And if you do remove app, you can actually remove it. So if you want to do things like, you know, put the deployment as part of your continuous integration cycle, or you want to automate the deployment of these add-ins when you're standing up a new environment, maybe for automated deployments, or maybe you are a partner, a cloud service provider, and every time you get a new customer, you want to use PowerShell to just deploy some add-ins that you've built that maybe are compelling to that vertical space. So you could do that all programmatically, which is actually super super helpful. So with that, I'm going to jump over here, and we're going to talk a little bit about, or show you a little bit about what this looks like. I have a couple of things here. So one, who here is familiar with the Office Developer Patterns and Practices? You guys probably want to see my screen. Okay, that's better. Sorry, I'll ask again, Patterns and Practices, how many people are familiar? Yeah, so a few. If you're not, this code that I'm showing you today, if you wanted to kick the tires and try it, it's all out there on the Office Developer Patterns and Practices. So if you just go to dev.office.com slash patterns and practices. There's also links right from dev.office.com. There's not just this one, but there's actually hundreds and hundreds of little snacky sample apps that you can use. So if you want to kick the tires and try things out, but you don't want to actually try to develop an app, there's probably some value there for you. So this one is an app that we built, myself and a guy named Shuman Chakrabarty, before we added the product capability to view YouTube videos. So it's a little underwhelming now since the product does it, but the scenario is still compelling. So what I have here, my Zoom, it's not working. Can you guys see that okay? So I basically have, what's that? Yeah, Windows. Nope, not on my Surface. Oh, yeah. Okay, so you can see here I've got an app manifest, and then I've got my provider. So we talked about how provider-hosted model. So this is basically just a website that is going to, and it has all of my HTML, my JavaScript, my CSS on the provider. The manifest itself, if you pull it up and look at it, you can see it's got some properties here. You know, the display name, which is actually what's going to be displayed within the Office client, the Outlook client version, the provider name, so that would typically be your company name or the ISV's name, so on and so forth. You can ask what permissions does it need, just read an item, so on. Okay, so with that, I am going to show you how F5 works. Hold on, so Windows, let's go minus. No, that's not going to work. What I'm doing, but there we go. So first I'll just F5 this, and I'll show you that it's not really smoke and mirrors. It's going to light up inside my mailbox. Okay. And it should pop up at my Outlook web. So it defaults to the web, but these actually do work within the client as well. And if you haven't seen it, we've done a lot of work to extend our endpoint support. So a lot of people complain, you know, especially on the SharePoint side, that, hey, wait, you know, I like writing full trust code, or, you know, I've got Visto plugins and I've got Calm plugins for the, you know, the Office client, and they work just fine. Well, that's great, but if you've noticed, we've done a lot of investment to get Office on other platforms. So we have Office for Android, we have Office for iOS, and the only way, this is the model where we're going to get that cross-platform extensibility story, okay? We will not be porting Visto over to the iPad for somewhat obvious reasons. And I give it my credentials. So again, this is the Visual Studio experience. I'm also going to show you how to go do this with just uploading the manifest yourself. So I'll do that here in just a second. Maybe. There it is. All right, so this is my demo tenant. And you can see here I've got a mail. Somebody's emailed me a YouTube link. Now, disregard what's below here because they actually added this into the product. But you could imagine maybe the Office 365 video portal, or maybe your own custom internal video solution that you've got, right? So anything that is URL-based that maybe it's your CRM system. I mean, you could do really interesting things like, hey, if somebody pastes a URL in here and it matches this regex, then light up my app. So, but if I click this now, you can see that it'll actually go out and let me play the video just straight in context. And so I'll be able to bring my application functionality straight into Outlook where people are working. So so that's just the F5 experience. So now if I wanted to actually go upload this guy myself, let's say I've done my development and now I want to have my administrator deploy it so that everyone in the organization can see it, because what I did there with my F5, that was only available to me as a developer. Then what I'm going to do is I'm first going to open this thing up in a folder because I'm going to need this path here in a second. And then I'm going to go to my Office 365 portal, so portal.office.com. I'm signed in as a tenant administrator. I come down here to Exchange. And you can see here, Organization Add-ins. So I'm going to click that. You can see it good enough, I think. And then there's a few that we ship, so you can see the add-ins that we actually ship here. Okay. And then if I want to add a new one, I have some options. I can say I want to add it from the store. There's a ton of mail add-ins out there in the store today. And again, we're working with lots and lots of partners to get more and more of them out there. I can add from a URL, so maybe I just have the manifest on a web server somewhere. I could hang it out there with my provider, and I can add from a file. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually add it from a file. So I'm going to say add from a file. I'm going to browse. This is why I needed that path. And then I'm going to go into core.youtube app, and then I have my XML file there. So when I do this, I'm going to say next. Again, you can do this through PowerShell, but I think seeing it in the UI does give you an idea of what that looks like. So you can see now that I have a YouTube app. It was built by Contoso. You can see by default it is disabled, okay? So I see people trip on that all the time. They're like, hey, I uploaded it. It doesn't show up in my mailbox. What you do is you just go in here, you say edit. You can say that it is optional and it's enabled by default. You can say it's disabled by default or it's mandatory. So mandatory would be available to everybody in your organization whether they want to see it or not. And that's what I'm going to do just for fun. So now the app is actually enabled. And so if I was to navigate now to my Outlook, so I'll use the wonderful waffle here. Then you can see again, it goes ahead and lights up. The way that these things light up is it actually has activation rules. So there's some logic that you can put in there to determine when that app is going to actually show up. So you don't end up cluttering it with, you know, 90 apps that are only applicable to certain scenarios. So and it really is that easy. That's pretty much how to deploy these things. And they're built with HTML, JavaScript, CSS. So you don't have to worry about finding some, you know, learning some, you know, high learning curve to build them. So all right, with that, I'm going to cut back over to our slide deck, and we're going to talk a little bit about deploying to the corporate catalog. So, anybody have any question on the mail add-ins before I move on? No? Okay, great. So, what is a catalog? So, the catalog is a special site collection, and it is intended for storing and managing apps for Office and SharePoint. So, Exchange handles the mail add-ins, SharePoint handles both SharePoint and Office, okay? Administrators of the catalog can upload and make apps available in the catalog. So like we talked about before, the Exchange, you actually had a custom permission level. If you, in SharePoint, if you wanted to give somebody else in your organization the rights to deploy apps without being a tenant admin, really all you need to do is go give them permissions on that site collection, okay? So that way they can upload apps. And manage them without you having to get involved, and you don't need to worry about them mucking around in different places in the admin interface that would scare you. The catalog must be created before initial use, so we do that for you in SharePoint Online, but if you're on-prem, you do have to go create that catalog site collection. It doesn't happen for you, so I see people trip on that a lot. And there's a URL there that's got a lot of information, more information there. So when you're deploying to a catalog, there are some differences between Office 365 and on-prem, all right? So the corporate catalog is per web application in SharePoint, okay? Now, in SharePoint Online, we have one web application. I don't know if you guys knew that, but that is how we have architected SharePoint Online. So that means you have one centralized catalog in SharePoint Online, which is actually kind of interesting because you can deploy it once and it's available to everyone in the environment. Now, on-prem, you could have multiple web applications, right? Each one of those web applications can have a catalog, all right? You can look at that as either a feature or a pain, depending on your scenario. So you may have to deploy, if you want the app available to all of them, you may have to deploy it to multiple web apps, right? Multiple catalogs. But typically, you have created a separate web app for a reason. And this is why we made this design decision in SharePoint. Maybe you have a web app for finance, or maybe you're in energy and you have a web app for your traders and a web app for your production folks and you're trying to keep them separate. Then you can deploy apps that to those two different audiences by just putting them in the catalog, and you don't have to worry about managing the security of each line item within them. So I typically look at that as a feature. So there are some additional approaches. So if you just upload it in the catalog, you know, it's available, people can install it on a site, everything's great. But there are some more complex things that you can actually do with these add-ins in SharePoint. So you can do what's called app stapling when you're in SharePoint. So the apps can be installed on the catalog site itself, okay? So when you do that, you actually get some additional options that allow you to target the app to different sites, okay? So the first case, I just put an app out there in the catalog. Somebody can go into their site collection, they can go into their web, they can say, hey, I want to add an app. That app would be available, and then they would add it. But maybe you want that app to be on that site already, and you don't want to have to do that 1,000 times, or you don't want all of your users to have to go navigate out there and to install it. So this is where app stapling can be beneficial, all right? So you'll notice in the picture there that there's an additional, once you've installed the app on the actual site collection for the catalog, which you just go to the app and you know, install, then there's an additional option that shows up, and it's a deployment option. And this only works in the catalog. So if you do this in a separate site collection, you'll never get the deployment option, okay? Once you click on the deployment option, then you can choose how you want to staple the apps, okay? You can say, I want it to be on specific sites. So maybe you've got a list of sites that you want that app add-in to be on. You could do it by managed path. So maybe you say every site that's underneath this managed path is going to, every site collection underneath this managed path is going to have this app. You can also do it by site template. So maybe all the team sites you want it to be available on, or maybe all the publishing sites you want it to be available on, or maybe maybe the OneDrive for business sites, but I don't recommend that. I try to stay away from customizing those things as much as possible. The interesting thing here is these cannot be removed by the site administrators as long as the site meets one of those criteria that you set, okay? So even if the admin wanted to go remove the app, he can't. It's going to block him. It's going to say, hey, nope, that app was installed by your administrator. You can't do that. And that can be helpful for some scenarios. So that sounds like nirvana, but there are some limitations. So the centralized deployment means that there are centralized app resources, okay? So the app web, the remote web, they're all shared amongst all the instances of that app. So I don't get an instance of the app web for every site that that app is actually installed on. That may or may not be a problem. It may be a feature to you, right? You could say all of the data for this app is in one place, right? But if you wanted to do things like have different configuration, you know, you're storing different things depending on what site it's acting on, you need to take that into account in the data that you're storing in the app web, right? So you need to take into account that this thing could have, you know, 1,000 instances in your environment, and maybe you need to make sure that thing's not surfacing data from other instances. So there are some interesting scenarios there that you need to think about. Also, you have the same remote web. So if it's a provider-hosted application, I can't have an instance of the provider different for different sites, okay? If I have any of those requirements, I'm going to have to resort to what we call sideloading, and we'll talk a little bit about that here in a minute. The other interesting thing is remote events, such as handle app install, are only executed in the catalog site itself, because if you remember, the app was actually installed in the catalog site. So all of those events are going to fire in the catalog site. I've seen a lot of people try to use this capability to do things like deploy branding or deploy, you know, files into a site, right? That will not work because it's only going to deploy it into the catalog site, and every site that it's stapled to is not going to get those artifacts created. So that does limit the usefulness for branding, or maybe if you're trying to do things into the host web, like create lists, libraries, site columns, content types, you're not going to be able to do that, all right? We'll talk a little bit here in a minute about how you can do those types of things, but you're going to need to own your provisioning pipeline for your site collections. So with that, we'll go kick the tires a little bit on the corporate catalog just to show you some of the things there. And I'll go ahead and show you where this is at. So if I'm in the admin portal, similar to how I got to the Exchange side, I'm going to go to SharePoint. That's going to bring me to the SharePoint tenant administration section. I'm going to go to apps. Maybe, yeah. And then I have the app catalog. I also have some other additional options here. So I can purchase apps, I can manage licenses, I can configure my store settings. Maybe I want to turn the store off for my environment. Maybe I want to turn it on. Maybe I want to do that. I can also monitor apps and I can control app permissions. So if I need to revoke the permissions of an app or something, I can do all that from here. But what we're talking about is specifically the app catalog. And you'll see that I can say distribute apps for SharePoint, distribute apps for Office, manage requests for apps. So if I go into distribute apps for SharePoint, wait a minute, I had one, let's see, this one here, open, something's wrong. Okay, it's available, so we'll go to a site here in a minute, but if I wanted to put a new one, I would just click new. If I want to upload one, so I've got a .app package where I've actually packaged up my app, then I would upload that there. I can also go to the store. So the interesting thing about this is just a SharePoint list, all right? So here I can do things like, properties. You'll see it's just a SharePoint list, right? And because it's just a SharePoint list, I could break inheritance on these list items, right? So if I, before we talked about maybe using different web apps for different departments, maybe you've got everybody in one web app, but you still want to control what apps are available, then you could just break inheritance on this list item and say, I only want people in this security group to see this. Then when they're navigating to a site and they say add an app, then they're only going to see the apps that they have rights for. So. Sorry. And then if I want to go to the store, then it's actually pretty easy to add apps. I can navigate, I can find one, I can say click, I can add it. It's going to ask me for my tenant admin credentials. But then I click here and I say add it, and it will actually deploy it into, it'll say confirm you wish to add the app. Continue, do not close the browser. And then it would actually go get that app and it installs it into the site that I've bought it for. Some of them install into one particular site, some of them, so if I go here now, hold on. I should now see my DocuSign site. Site contents, add an app, and you'll see that I've got some from my store here that I've actually put into this environment. So where's my DocuSign app? Ack, I must have had a problem here. I think I messed this up right before. But if I look here, I like my Quizcom cascading lookup app. I can say trust it. That's one I got from the store earlier. You'll see the app actually gets installed. So the ones from the store and the ones from the catalog would show up in this experience here. I have said that I want my users to be able to deploy these apps, and so the store apps will show up. And then here, it's actually adding the app. Once it's done adding the app, this would show up and be active. I can click on it. The user would be able to use that app functionality. Okay. So we talked about some of those limitations a little while ago about some of the things you couldn't do when you were stapling apps into the catalog. Things like, I want to create content types, I want to create lists, I want to create libraries. And I'm not talking about in the app web, I'm talking about in the host web. That's very, very common scenarios that we've grown accustomed to doing farm solutions and taking those types of approaches. You can actually address most of those limitations by owning your site provisioning process. And we have a lot of guidance in the Office Developer Patterns and Practices about that. So how many people here are SharePoint people? Yeah, a good chunk of you. How many people here have built a custom site provisioning solution for their on-prem environment? No? So how many people here just create site collections like in the IT department? Like somebody requests in the business. Yeah, so more of you than not. When I say remote site provisioning, the IT department request flow is actually valid as well, right? Because I could do things like when I create a site, go run PowerShell against it or run some code against it to upload artifacts and things like that. So we have examples of both of those scenarios in the Office Developer Patterns and Practices, so I suggest you get familiar with that. Because then you can do things like applying branding, you can deploy content type site columns, you can manipulate the host web in lots of different ways. Maybe I want to deploy some custom pages, maybe I want to deploy custom web parts, maybe I want to sideload apps onto that site before my users actually start using it. So I've got some links there at the bottom for the patterns and practices stuff. Just look for site provisioning. There's probably 14, 15 different examples of how to do that. At Microsoft, we actually have one of the biggest SharePoint deployments in the world. I think before we even started moving to SharePoint Online, we had more site collections than we have people that work at Microsoft. And I'm not even talking about their OneDrive for Business sites. I'm talking about just collaboration sites. And so anybody wants to talk about SharePoint sprawl, I can definitely commiserate with you. But we actually let people self-service create those sites, and then we capture some metadata from them. What type of site are you looking to create? What kind of data are you going to put in there? And then when it's created, we actually go remotely provision it and then apply, you know, some we add apps, we add custom content types, we do those types of things based on what template that they wanted. So think about that. Think about how that impacts your scenarios when you're and maybe an add-in isn't exactly what you need, right? There's a lot more capability and flexibility in the app model than just add-ins. And so don't limit yourself. Don't think, the add-in model doesn't do what I want it to do today, so I'm just going to throw my hands up and go back to building farm solutions. That may work for you today. That may work for you for the next 5 years while you're still on-prem. But if you want to go to Office 365, that's not going to work for you because we don't allow farm solutions in Office 365. And then if you want to start to realize the types of advantages that we found in Office 365 around the stability and security of our SharePoint environments and keeping those developers from running their code in process and having risk of bringing my environment down, then moving to that add-in model or this app model actually has a lot of other additional advantages for you. The other great thing about the app model is it's loosely coupled, right? So if I upgrade this SharePoint farm, as long as the APIs that these apps are using to communicate with SharePoint are still there, that's fine. If I update the app, I don't have to bring SharePoint down, right? I don't have to wait for a maintenance window necessarily. And so, you know, you can get a lot more, a lot of advantages from moving to that model. So that's really all I've got. We'll wrap up. We've got the options for deploying. We covered that. We talked about deploying to the store. We talked about deploying to Exchange. I showed you what that looked like. We talked about going to the corporate catalog, and then we talked about some additional approaches that you want to consider if you're doing this in your environment. And with that, I'll turn it back over. I can answer any questions. I can just stay here for the next 10, 15 minutes. So with that, is there any questions? Either you guys are ready for this conference to be over, or we answered all the questions with this. So appreciate it. I'll be around the hub if anybody wants to, you know, come chat a little bit afterwards. So thank you very much.